Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Classroom 33 podcast. Pastor Dustin here with Steve Prudian. And today, Steve, we are going a little bit off the beaten path, and we are going to be talking about the different viewpoints that we look at problems from. We know that Job has a viewpoint of where his problems are coming from, and his friends have a viewpoint of where the problems are coming from, and they don't necessarily line up. So you've gone ahead and put this together, and I want to say it looks really well done to start off with. But you've got five different perspectives that we could possibly take for anything. So why don't we jump into those?
Okay, I'm glad you had mentioned that. You know, all of us in our lives are going to have days that we're going to have problems. And they can be a whole myriad of things, different things that can bother us. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, they actually stymie us. They get us to the point we don't know which way to turn. We don't know where we can find help. But one of the hardest things when we fall on to a difficult time is people that we think are our friends, or we think that we have associates who would understand and have some sympathy towards what's going on in our lives, they try to second guess everything. And depending upon where that person is coming from, they're going to come from who they are, okay, and how they would approach the situation in their life. And these areas are these, okay? There is the social perspective. There's the political perspective. There's the natural perspective. There's the practical perspective. And then there's the religious perspective. Each one of them has a stinger to it, because everybody thinks that they know what you need. And everybody thinks that they know what it is of why you're having this problem. But they only know what they know from the outside looking in. They're not on in the inside dealing with the trouble or the affliction.
That's exactly right. You know, we all have our personal bent on for which one of these we tend to lean to. But we are all on the outside looking in, and there's not a single one of us that understands the ultimate perspective, which is God's perspective. And but that doesn't stop us from trying to understand that, or even trying to play God in our understanding of that. So let's take a little bit deeper look into these, because maybe our listeners aren't going to understand exactly what you mean when you list out these different perspectives. So what does a social perspective even mean, just to start with?
Let's get one thing clear.
Okay.
Even though we're in a Job study, he was an individual. He was a man. Your name may be Dave. Your name may be Dustin. Your name may be Rob. Your name may be Sally. But you will have a Job type of day. It will come.
It will.
Now, from the social perspective, okay, people who are looking at it from the outside looking in, not yourself, who is in the suffering, but what they'll say, most people will say, oh, that's just too bad. I wonder what went wrong. They're assuming something went wrong.
Right.
Because apparently it must be wrong with you, otherwise you wouldn't be going through this.
That's pretty fair. And the political view you have here listed, that he got what he deserved. And man, do we hear that a lot. We really do hear that a lot as a culture. I think this is probably the one we lean to the most.
You know what's interesting? It's called political because it is actually it actually makes an accusation.
Right.
But it gives a person license to make that accusation. But in many ways, to say that it's political is to really shroud it in really what it is. What it really is, okay, is a person of a superior viewpoint, casting judgment upon a person who's in trouble.
I like the way you describe that. I really do. Okay. So what's the natural viewpoint?
Well, the natural viewpoint, you know, just recently, Florida has experienced a hurricane. Mm-hmm. The natural viewpoint is that just happens. That's just life. Okay? That's just a storm. But what they're not saying under their breath is they're saying, tough. Too bad. Okay? That's your bad luck for that day.
Yeah. That seems to go along really well with that. There's a older generation, and the greatest generation would probably be the best example, to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps,
mm-hmm.
kind of mentality. Yep, it's tough. You're down. Pick yourself up. Let's go.
Yeah, but the generation of today expects somebody else to bail them out.
Well, I'm not going to get into that.
No, we're not going to get into that. But the thing is that if you didn't know how to work before it happens, it's a little late to learn now.
And that's totally fair. That's totally fair. All right. So the business and practical, that's pretty self-explanatory.
Actually, I wanted to go into the book of Job.
Okay.
In this particular respect, as far as business and practical. Job's friends were business people, and they're looking for practical solutions. They're looking for practical causes, which is really what the book of Job is all about. They're saying these things don't happen to a guy who's managing his business properly. They're saying, Job, you know, you've been resting on your laurels too long. You should have had a small army guarding your herds and your crops if you knew that you had people that were either going to burn them or steal them. Bad management, Job. Okay. Oh, Job, by the way, you should know not to expose your family in one setting, because your family could be attacked in that setting, and then you basically put your greatest eggs in the same basket. Bad management, Job. Job, what were you doing? What were you thinking, letting hired servants basically run your business for you? Were you too busy in town, sitting at the gate, being honored and admired by people, while other people were doing your hard work?
Well, sounds like friends I don't want to have.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, those are all the kinds of things that you would hear from that business and practical standpoint. It's that that whole idea, you should have known better. You really should have known better. Okay, so, and then we get to the last one on the list, the religious perspective.
Well, the religious perspective is the one that I believe stings the most.
Right.
The reason it stings the most is the religious perspective should have generosity, and it should have kindness, and it should have helps. But oftentimes the religious approach is an accusation, much like Job was accused of. And the accusation is bad things happen to bad people. What's your sin? What did you do, Job? But then again, you could be put in fill in the blank, okay, when people will do that to you.
Right. Yeah, and there is a huge, huge sting in that religious perspective that you are the cause of your own problem. And I can't tell you how many people I know that, won't even do church anymore. They know God, they love Jesus, but they won't do church because somebody has done that to them. Somebody has stuck them with that barb, and it's just not going away. When church people hurt church people, it sticks around for a long time. But that does beg the question, Steve, though, why do we associate blessings and success with doing good and having God bless us. And when things go wrong, we flip and we equate it to that you must have sinned. You must have done something wrong. Why do we do that?
Childhood. We basically develop our standard of both response, behavior, rewards, and punishment from our exposure through childhood. So when we get to the point of being involved in a church or an awareness of God, we see God much like as a parent. And we figure that, okay, what makes my parents happy is when I do what they say. What makes them unhappy is when I disobey what they say. Mm-hmm. So subsequently, how good a day I'm going to have depends upon how well I follow those expectations. And so we associate God with the same thing as is when we were children.
I can absolutely see how we get there. But the reality is God has the grace and mercy to not do that to us. He is also truly just. So we do have consequences for our sin. We don't want to overlook that. There are consequences for our sin. But there's also grace and mercy. And the fact that we live in a sinful, fallen world, and not everything bad that happens is because of sin, our own sin.
Or is it because of God?
It might not be. It might just be something God is allowing to happen for his own greater purpose.
And who is the adversary?
Satan.
And does he have any part to play in things that happen to us?
Oh, he has a big part to play.
Yes, he does. So subsequently, okay, give credit where credit's due, and don't blame God because of the fact that you're expecting him to keep you out of it.
Well, that's fair. And I would actually posit that all of these viewpoints are partially correct and mostly wrong.
That's interesting you say this. Tell me why they're mostly wrong.
I'd say they're mostly wrong because, okay, social, you just go, well, that's too bad. What went wrong? You're assuming something went wrong.
Uh-huh.
It is too bad, and something may have gone wrong, but you're automatically making that assumption. With the political, he got what he deserved, okay? Again, you're making the assumption that the other person did something that justifies what is being received. You know, as a police officer, that is just the standard train of thought. You know, I'll give an example. You have a local thug, thief, bad guy, whatever, and his house gets broken into. He gets robbed. You go, well, that's too bad. You totally deserved it. That's the train of thought. And it's completely wrong. Okay, is the guy a thug and a thief and whatever? Yeah, he is. Does that mean he deserves to have his house broken into? No, it doesn't. Nobody deserves that. Our house is our home. And our actually, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is based on the fact that every man's house is his castle. And nobody deserves that. That's in the Constitution. You know? Natural. Yeah, bad things happen. Yes, bad things do happen. But you're also in that assuming that there is nothing that can be done to safeguard. There's nothing that can be done to prepare ahead of time. You just have to roll with the punches and keep getting back up. You know, not everybody can be Rocky Balboa and keep getting up off of the mat after Creed punishes him over and over and over again. That's not what life is. Business and practical, you know, that is very parallel to the political, but sometimes businesses fall and businesses fail through no fault of the owner or the workers being there, sometimes COVID happens and you're not allowed to go and do your business. So you can't say that, again, it's he mismanaged the business, just makes the assumption that Job did something wrong and he's getting what he deserves, essentially. And the religious, I'm going to say, is probably the least right out of all of them, because they should know better. We should be approaching people with love, with grace, with mercy, and with kindness and open arms. When something goes bad in somebody's life, we need to approach them as if better than we would want to be approached, right? Treat people how you would want to be treated. And instead, we assume that they've earned it, that they sinned, they did something wrong. You know, somebody breaks into your house, it's because you stole a candy bar when you were 8 years old. You know, it's finally that decision catching up with you. And it's that judgment. So there you go. That's my take, as fast as I can give it, on why I think those are maybe partially right, but mostly wrong.
Okay. Why don't we jump down to this, okay?
Okay.
Here's a touchy subject for our listening audience. Even though I don't have it here.
Okay.
Have you been rejected by others because you went to a different church? Or if you change jobs from one company to another company that competes with the company that you left? Has that happened to you? Have you been snubbed?
I can't say that it's happened to me with a church. I have been lucky in that way, but I will say when I was in law enforcement and I had PTSD and my mental health was bad and I had to stop working, I was excommunicated from all law enforcement, everything. I was not contacted, phone calls weren't returned, text messages weren't returned.
You became a leper.
I became a leper.
You became a leper.
I might as well have just stood on my front porch ringing a bell going, unclean, unclean, ding, ding, ding. So yeah, I have been essentially cast out by a family in that way.
Happens, doesn't it?
It does.
Do people even know what they're doing?
Most of the time, no.
What does Jesus say about that? He has a statement about that.
About casting people away?
No, he has a statement about why people treat other people the way they do.
Well, I'm going to sum it up and just say hurt people hurt people.
Jesus says they don't even know what they're doing.
Yep.
But they still need to be forgiven in spite of the fact they don't even know why they do it.
Yeah.
And that's...
Yeah, you're referring to, you know, situations like when Jesus is on the cross.
And right.
And the Roman soldiers are just doing what they do.
Right.
And he prays, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do. And they didn't. They had absolutely no idea. Even in their culture, they had no idea what they were doing was wrong.
Do you think that statement that Jesus made even applied to the Pharisees who wrongfully persecuted him?
Well, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. They had such a misguided view of who the Messiah was going to be. They're expecting somebody to show up, a mighty warrior on a white steed
right.
With the armor and the sword and the whole thing, and to ride single-handedly into Rome and sack Rome and do all that kind of stuff. So no, they didn't have a clue.
It actually went beyond that. Did you know that?
What went beyond that? I'm sorry.
They expected the Messiah to bring with him a heavenly army that Rome couldn't withstand.
Right.
Okay? They knew that the Messiah had to lead that army to defeat the enemy, but they were also expecting an army that Rome had no defense against.
Right. And I am going to come to their defense on that, because the prophecies in Daniel and in Ezekiel and in Zechariah don't specify that the Messiah comes twice.
No, he doesn't.
They don't specify that he comes twice, and they only saw him as coming once, and they expected everything to happen on that first time. We have the ability now and the privilege to have had the first coming of Messiah already happen, so we can go back and look at those books and understand he comes twice.
It's interesting you brought up Daniel and Ezekiel, because when they were talking about the Messiah, there was no Roman Empire.
Right.
Okay, so the reality is their Messiah was coming for another purpose, and it could have been for the purpose of overthrowing the Babylonians. It could have been for the purpose of overthrowing the Medes and the Persians, or maybe the Greeks. But then came the Romans, and the people that were alive at the time that Jesus Christ showed up on the face of the earth, they were dealing with their own devil. And their own devil was the Roman Empire.
Right.
And they wanted salvation. They wanted freedom from the enslavement of that particular empire.
Right. Not even realizing that the enemy that he is going to be coming with his angel army to defeat isn't their devil, but the devil. So,
do you know the Pharisees were actually hedging their bets, because they expected the Messiah to not only defeat Rome, but to set up the Jewish nation to replace Rome.
Hmm. Yeah, with what I know of that history, I can kind of see that happening. All right, we've wandered a little bit away. So, yes, this happens to us because we simply do not know better. And it's happening to Job. We've talked the last couple of weeks about the accusations of Eliphaz. But Job has lost his business, his wealth, his reputation, his family loyalty, and possibly his future. He has literally nothing left. He's been stricken with sickness, with illness, with boils. His wife at this point is completely out of the picture. We don't hear another thing about her.
Ever.
So we don't know what happened to her, except we can know that she wasn't part of, well, she wasn't one of the things that was taken from him, because she's not listed as one of those. So that's about all we know about her. So Job's down to nothing. Why doesn't he give up?
Would you give up?
I might.
I might too. We don't give credit to one thing that Job stands on. The one thing. The one promise. The promise is that Job knows whom he believes. And you cannot persuade him away from whom he believes and whom he professes. And he will stand on his faith even if he has to die. In fact, Job would even welcome death. And he would welcome death knowing that he stood his ground, being faithful to the God that he served and that he believes in.
Hmm.
Well, Dustin, here's the question for the audience.
All right.
Those that are listening, okay?
All right.
What would you do if you were in a position where you've lost everything, including your health, your whole family churned away from you, your friends basically mocked you and accused you, the city that you lived in basically relegated to you to live in the city dump, okay? Who do you believe in? And would you give up or not?
Well, I believe in God and I believe in Jesus, and there is absolutely nothing that can take that away from me. Now, emotionally, physically, I might not fight the battle that Job fought. I would talk to God. I would ask the questions. I don't know how long I could respond to the accusations. I might just go live in the dump and just be on my own until God decided I was done being on my own.
You know, there's an expression, and you hear it in sports, and usually this expression is said when you're losing. Oftentimes it's said when you're feeling pain. Is oftentimes you'll be at the point where you can't go another inch, you can't go one more minute, no matter what the sport is. And the coach will pull this out of his pocket. And he said, well, he'll say, gentlemen, he'll say, winners never quit. And losers never win. So go back in there and finish the game. And what Jesus wants for us is for us to finish the game so he can say, well done.
I think that's a perfect spot to leave it.
Yes, it is. This next week, we're going to go back to what we didn't get to do because of extenuating circumstances. We're going to go back and we're going to finish Job chapter 5, the 10 charges that Eliphaz brings against Job so Job can bring the following week his answers to Eliphaz's charges.
Okay. I very much look forward to the discussion on Job's rebuttal, but that will have to wait for another day. Steve,
yes,
thank you very much for coming in.